Same thing here on The Horn. America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Now let's crank up the jam. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Hey, Nonny Nonny. Get your adverbs here. 1 minute past 11 o'clock here on the East Coast of America. 1 minute past 8 down on the Pacific Coast. And 1 minute past 3 in the wonderful world of Oz, where John Fox is. This is the Horn Section. I'm Bob Kincaid on Flugelhorn. I keep trying to come up with obscure musical instruments. That was Chuck Mangione that played the flugelhorn, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
That's what I thought. Yay me in my last few remaining little brain cells.
It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool instrument, actually.
Oh, it really is. What was that thing that Dizzy Gillespie played with the bent bell that, you know, went up at an angle?
Okay, it was just a standard trumpet. But the thing that happened is, in the early days, he basically fell over once, and he had no case, and it bent the bell up. And in the old clubs, he suddenly could hear himself coming off of the ceiling like he could never hear himself before.
Wow.
So it just became his standard fare.
That's an interesting bit of trivia. That's worthy of Billy Shears. Billy Shears has all this musical information. John, that's truly excellent. Never would have
suspected that. It was purely just fluke. And, you know, here he's got to go on. He's got one trumpet. You know, he wasn't a rich guy at the time. And had to play it, and coming off, you know, probably the 12-foot ceiling in some club on a 3-foot stage, and he could hear himself as though he had, like, a, you know, like monitors or something, and he went, hey, this ain't so bad, and guess what? It makes me look unique, and then the cheeks and all that, and the rest is history.
What's that, Skippy? Is Peter down a well?
Yeah, John, Bob informed me about 3 or 4 minutes before my show ended that you were conferenced in on me because we had to connect because of this show, but that you were going to be quiet. And I'm like timing the back from Bob. Yeah, right. Yeah, like that'll happen.
I wasn't necessarily quiet, Peter. I just muted what goes from me to there, and I was just listening. In fact, I was sitting there kind of noodling along with on my acoustic with VJC's little remixes there.
Oh, fun.
Wait a minute. I'm getting a clairvoyant moment. I'm looking at the crystal ball, and the fog is clearing. John Fox in a remit segment? Is this possible? Will you join us? Oh, John, it'd be too cool.
I'm sitting here. I'm like, I'm connected early. I picked the guitar up, and I'm going, oh, right, okay. That track would be in D. Right, okay. And I just started noodling. It was a great way to pass the time.
No, it sounds like a load of fun. You know, I don't know. Maybe some evening you could haul out some Screaming Jets and put a backbeat behind it, and you know, turn it into the 8-minute version. And well, you know, Bob's your uncle.
Okay, there you go. I think we should send VJC Better from the Screaming Jets.
Oh.
See what he could do with that.
Oh yeah, I've got a whole stable of the world class DJs. I've got to tell you, we got the pick of the cream of the crop around here. You know, anybody, yeah, just there's a long list of people I can handle it for.
Well, go, John.
Oh, I was just going to say, beware. You just never know what might pop up, because I'm all wired up, and the headphones are kind of like on top of the guitar strap, and it was too complicated to disconnect, so I'm still kind of connected, so I have no idea what I might end up doing.
Ruh-roh.
Well, you'll have that sometimes, you know, and it's not always bad.
I got to tell you guys, I am melting over here. We had this one day of respite from summer on our Monday, which, of course, was the American Sunday. And so the one kind of cool and comfortable day, was that a day I had a show? No!
No.
And,
only when you can grab the air with your bare hands and wring water out of it, yeah.
I'm telling you, I stand in the studio. Today I've got actually the door wide open, bugger the traffic noise, and, you know, I usually go and, you know, have a bit of a cool down before I do the come on and do the show, and brand new fresh T-shirt is absolutely three-quarters saturated, and I haven't been doing much. It's just hot as all buggery down here.
You know, oddly enough, it may sound weird coming from me as opposed to Peter, who lives in Florida, but I remember last summer and couldn't get it cool in the studio. Had a computer that was constantly shutting itself down because it was getting hot. Agnes was still producing. I was over in the host chair. And because this studio has a southern exposure, I got some water weight to give and stuff, and it was just pouring on. Yeah, so I sympathize, truly I do.
I can deal with it all except for it running down over the eyebrows into the eyes. That is the bit that really starts to make doing radio hard, especially when you're trying to read something.
And that's why you wear the bandana do-rag, right?
Yeah, and I actually don't have one today, but I tell you, sometimes, you know, I could put like a terry cloth on my head and it wouldn't do any good.
The tablecloth from an Italian bistro, yeah.
You start a show and once you're sort of strapped in, you know, it's like NASA. And you're in the unit, you've got all the wires rigged to your head and all over the place, so you can't really adjust the temperature anymore once the show starts. And if things change, you're kind of stuck with it. At least I am.
Oh,
and
yeah, you're absolutely stuck. I mean, I would be I'd drink liquids constantly during my show, and I would be just screwed if it wasn't for Agnes, you know, tiptoeing in periodically and just sort of reaching around me and grabbing the water mug and carrying it and bringing it back, because there, you know, there's no walking away. Well, especially now that QNN has sort of gone away.
You don't even get your little 6-minute buffer, do you, anymore?
No, I really didn't realize how badly I missed those folks until they were gone.
No.
6 minutes, you can at least run to the loo in an emergency.
Oh, anybody who's ever been a DJ in a radio station knows that 6 minutes, there's time for a peanut butter sandwich, a run around the block. You know, I mean, and God knows the things you can accomplish during Stairway to Heaven.
you can go down to the corner cafe and order lunch, mate.
Yeah. So that little 4-5 minute break at the top of the hour is sorely missed, and I'm looking around for something we can run for a top of the hour news, because it's nice to have something that updates and, you know, sort of keeps you on top of things. But so far, no luck. I miss those guys.
I was actually wondering, because I know we're all hoping that QNN, you know, is able to recover from what they're dealing with, because as we've spoken of before, out of all the kind of, you know, CBS and all these other different outfits, there was kind of like more news packed into that little 5-6 minutes than most people do.
I don't think I ever heard a single Britney Spears, Lindsay Lohan, missing white woman, Anna Nicole Smith story ever.
You got a great point, Bob. And we used to make fun of her because sometimes she was a little weird, but it was good news. It really was a great little news service.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And we were just having kind of like a little bit of professional fun, not like we haven't flubbed a pronunciation here or there.
No, and it's entirely my fault that, it's on me, it's certainly not on her, it's entirely my fault that every time I heard the name Barbara Lewis, I felt immediately, it's like, you know, a sort of a Rain Man monk sort of compulsion thing that I had to say, Hare Krishna Beauregard, because, you know, it's a John Prine song, Come Back to Us, Barbara Lewis, Hare Krishna Beauregard, and, you know, it's not her fault.
Well, we really kind of needed her. She was somebody that we could make fun of because she really wasn't part of the staff. She was very good, but we can't make fun of each other. It'll just melt down. So we have to make
fun of her. Well, no, I mean, we make fun of each other all the time. Where's the sport in that?
But what I was wondering, Bob, and maybe the listeners can throw some input this way, Billy Shears has that kind of international one that he pulls from. Could we use that for the time being?
If it's gettable, but I was under the impression that was audio off TV that I don't get.
Oh, is it really? Oh, okay, I did not know that. I thought that was one of those, you know, like a Q&N kind of thing done somewhere else. But
I mean, I could be wrong, I would gladly stand to be corrected if I am. Of course, I remember the bad old days, John, when you, me, and Bruce, I was telling Peter about this the other night, and he was like, you did? When you, me, and Bruce did the head-on radio network news. And maybe there's somebody out there that wants to do that.
Actually,
one of
our mods has put up their hand, and I warned her, you know not what you're asking for. Because, you know, Gail even did a couple of the newscasts here and there. And that little newscast can be just as much work as doing an hour show easily.
Well, it takes an hour to write a 5-minute newscast.
Yeah.
And then it takes more time to record it and get it right. So
Absolutely.
I mean there's certainly no gimme on that. But it might be because people do write, they write to you, they write to me, they write to us. Saying, you know, I want to start something, I want to do something, I want to try something. Well, you know, if you've got evening hours available and want to try your hand at writing and then recording an hourly newscast, let's have a run at it. What the hell? Right? I mean, you know, all in favor?
Network News Ninjas.
I say but I take no responsibility for the headache.
That's the thing. I think we would have to put together a team.
It would have to be.
Responsible for, you know, 4 or 5 hourly newscasts on a night. No. I mean, you and I and Bruce did that for a while, and that was as big of a booger. Oh, he said booger. That was as big of a booger as anybody doing any show. Although I gotta say, John, I think your harmonic news intro was just the coolest thing.
And the other thing too is we had a rule. We had a couple of rules when we were doing it. First of all, we never referenced Bush as the president. He was
right.
Always Mr. Bush. And we had this thing going. You know, if they think the media is liberally twisted, we'll give them liberally twisted.
Yeah. We had a little style book going, and the standard reference, for instance, for Guantanamo was always the American concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay.
I still remember one. You did one, and actually it was a script you sent me, and it must have taken me 10 shots at getting through it without cracking up. And it had to do with death tolls in the United States, and you referenced it something like the Republican pro-life movement took a hit today when bloody, bloody, blah number soldiers were killed in a bombing in Iraq today. And I just could not get through that line that the Republican pro-life movement took a hit today. I was like, oh, my God.
Well, you know, liberal media. Well, you know, the liberal media wouldn't ran to court today to keep Dennis Kucinich off of a debate stage, guys.
This is an amazing story. It just blows me away this is happening.
And the note that came from bloody GE saying that the court was interfering with their freedom of speech. I thought when it came to news, they're supposed to report. But I think it's a great example of how broken the system is when a viable candidate, you know, even though he might not be, you know, in the top three, a guy who's still in the race is decided, well, we just don't want him in the debate. This has to prove to people that we have a media that is absolutely just hell-bent on telling us what the horse race is going to be. And it's
and not only that, but determining who the races, who the horses in the race are.
Well, exactly.
And what color the silks are, and who the jockey will be, and whether they're going to race on turf or dirt.
Well, I mean, this is interesting to me. The fact I was just going, I'm sorry, point out that Huckabee is certainly not the favorite amongst the RNC. In fact, I think they're looking at him with a little bit of horror. Yet Huckabee is never excluded.
Oh, no. Well, you know, they excluded Ron Paul when he had more numbers coming out of Iowa than Giuliani did, but Giuliani still got a seat on the Fox debate. You know, that's why the Ron Paul supporters chased Hannity into the building screaming, asshole, asshole, asshole.
That's still some of the best video in the past year, hands down, without a doubt. In the chat room this morning, Guy was saying, you know, how he thinks Ron Paul is a wacko, and I said, yeah, I might not agree with him either, but you had to have loved that Hannity footage. And Guy came back in the chat, he said, the damn funniest video I have seen in a long, long time.
Oh, without a doubt.
And you know, this is exactly it, though. I mean, we definitely have issues with Ron Paul, and I think that they're very justified. But I will defend to the hilt his right to be part of the debate.
Oh, absolutely. And Susan and I were talking about it on my show earlier this evening. The same thing applies to Mike Gravel. Crazier than a run-over dog, but I absolutely believe that there is room enough in our political discourse for him to stand behind a microphone and be crazy as a run-over dog. Because, you know, there's a sliding scale of crazy out there, guys. And on the one end, there's the what Mike Gravel is, you know, perceived as being crazy as a run-over dog, or, you know, crazier than a sprayed roach, Ron Paul. But, you know, how crazy, I mean, and I'm trying to be really, really, oh, God, I hate this word now, balanced. But
oh, that'll work.
Yeah, but really, when Ron Paul is talking about letting the individual states decide who can get married and letting individual states decide which women can make decisions about their own insides, that's crazy. But on the other hand, how crazy is it for somebody else at the other end of the spectrum to say, well, you know, I think we'll have the best health care in the world if only we turn the corporations loose.
That's
horrifying.
Crazy
is one of those one man's night shirts, another man's pajamas kind of things.
Well, you know, I keep watching this from a distance, guys, and I just shudder. You know, we were talking about, you know, the spit fight between, you know, Obama and Clinton, and how it seems like they both realized that this was really counterproductive. And I got to say that, Bill, yo, big dog, you really went to a new low when he jumped in on this. And that whole thing about, you know, the pin job comment from Obama, because he was so angry about it. And I really think it has tarnished the Clinton kind of label in my mind. You know, even though I'm not a big fan of Hillary, I would still take Bill Clinton over George W. Bush in, you know, half a heartbeat. But, you know, the fact that I always thought Bill Clinton was someone that was pretty good at staying above this. And for the first time in my lifetime, I felt he really kind of did himself a serious negative by going down to that level. And
my little digital hand here, what is the pin job? I don't know what you're talking about.
There was some sort of reference. I don't know the exact quote. But there was some sort of reference about someone who's invested in one of the companies that's invested in the Clinton campaign, that basically, I guess, is, you know, ends up being businesses that are outsourced to India. And Obama made some sort of comment that it was the Punjab campaign.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay,
well,
and I don't like that comment either, but I actually expected Bill to stay above that one. He's got so much more ammunition and so much more brains, no matter how much I might think he's too right-wing of a Democrat for my liking and too DLC, I do have respect for his intellectual abilities. And for him to
well, you know, you don't get a you don't get a Rhodes scholarship in a box of Cracker Jacks.
Yeah, and you know, for him to step down to that level, I think was just it did not do him or his history any good. It actually looked like the husband of a woman who's been offended standing up for her honor more than someone dealing in a intellectual debate. That's how it
there
looked.
You go.
Yeah, I've
I
seen him getting cranky, and you kind of wonder when he's going to challenge somebody to meet him on the heights at Weehawken and redo the Burr and Hamilton duel. But wait, there's more. Since you did reference the sort of racial sniping that was going on, and their decision, and I mentioned I don't know if either of you are aware of this, but both camps sort of pulled back and went, ooh, this is getting icky. Good for them. But it's always nice to see somebody making sure that we can keep the political discourse lowered. So I want to start by doing a little, you know, Sherman set the Wayback Machine for Flush Flimball Racist Gas Bag. And we'll start with this, just as a refresher course. This is the parody song that he played and continues to play with regard to Barack Obama. Okay, guys?
Okay.
Here we go. I think. Yeah.
Now, Obama, you know, he followed this, and he had to go out there and prove that he can speak this way, too. But the question that always surrounds Obama, even when he goes out and tries to imitate Mrs. Clinton's dialect, is he down for the struggle?
There's something humming down here. Oh, that's somebody's blackberry. That's Sharpton's blackberry. Is that Hillary calling?
Now, keep in mind, this is a day where BlackBerry service had blacked out. I know Friday was a bad day for BlackBerry on his Thursdays and Friday. I never lost mine. Well, I lost mine on Saturday a little bit, the receivability. But nevertheless, there's the black dialect for the urban national network or so forth. Let's go back to March 5th again. This is Selma, Alabama, and this is Obama talking about having been in Selma before.
This is the site of my conception. I am the fruits of your labor. I am the offspring of the movement. So when people ask me whether I've been to Selma before, I tell them I'm coming home.
Okay, so he's trying to illustrate here that he is down for the struggle. And at this next bite, this is at the National Urban Network, Obama says that he shouldn't get black votes just because he's black.
I should not get the support of the African-American community simply because I'm African-American.
Okay, so Limbaugh's after him because of using various and sundry vocal tones, right?
Well, I want to say,
but
right
didn't
here,
he?
I,
but, oh, but wait.
Those vocal tones. Sorry, didn't he use the same vocal tone in a very snarky way as he set up one of those clips?
Oh yeah, he did, and it's going to get worse. This is all just backgrounders, okay? A little bit more. Or not. Okay, let's try this again. Oh, this is just not my night. Here we go.
Jazz.
It'll only take a second, but this is the pet.
While we're waiting, I just want to say this. The whole thing about vocal tone or intonation of the choice of words, that doesn't make him a phony. It makes him comfortable with various... For instance, if I'm around a whole bunch of gay folks having a big party, I mean, I'm bound to say things differently than I would on the radio, well, maybe not necessarily, but that I would when I was at Methodist Church. And, John, when you're around a bunch of musicians,
Don't you use different vocabularies and phrases? Because it's, why not? What's wrong with that? It doesn't mean you're phony. You're amongst various groups.
You bet your ass, man. And you know, if there's anything that I've learned with all my kind of moving around this planet and even when I just moved around the United States, the fastest way to assimilate into any community is to pick up and utilize local slang.
Well, exactly. So, and yeah, speak the language, in other words.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so when I got here, you know, and I'm working in production, I quickly learned that an electrician was a sparky, right? You know, there's all these little, you know, terms. You don't call PVC tape or electrical tape as such. It's lecky tape. And, you know, it just made people react as opposed to going, hey, is there any black PVC around? And they look at you funny. And within a week, I went, hey, anyone know where the lecky tape supplies are? And they go, oh, yeah, third drawer in the drawers case. So it's about actually understanding language. You know, when I moved to Texas from the New York tri-state area, I picked up local slang really quick because I was the northern boy that came down. And so, you know, I was a real outsider because if you move to Texas and you ain't a Texan or a Mexican, you ain't nothing.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, you know, while we're talking about trying to restore a little bit of dignity to the political process, you can always count on a sleazy gut bucket like Flush Flimball to make it worse. And, you know, wow. You know, I had some objections to what Robert Johnson said on Mrs. Clinton's behalf a couple of days ago. But you know, why are we surprised? This is what the right wing does. They're the Klan gone mainstream. Okay, they are. And so this is...
well said.
This is Flush Flimball today. Here we go. Sometime. If you thought his earlier mimicry was good, it helps if I actually pot it up. So here we go.
Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. Have you noticed? It's Obama versus the Clintons. Two against one. Obama campaigning against both of the Clintons. I wonder how well Mrs. Clinton would hold up if the shoe was on the other foot. That is, if she had to run against an ex-president and a senator. I think she'd cry and complain about the unfairness. For all of her BS about being a victim and piling on, Obama is holding his own.
Here it comes.
Against both of them. Doing more than his share of the spade work.
Yeah, hammer that word spade just in case your right-wing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, the freak listeners don't get it. Right, Rush?
Right, right, exactly right. That's the way it works. That's the why they listen, because he's just like them, or pretends to be, but he's not. He's extremely rich. He doesn't give a damn, but he pretends very well.
Well, that's okay. Just in case they missed it, he's going to drive the nail.
Yeah. Maybe even gaining ground at the moment. Using not only the spade, ladies and gentlemen, but when he finishes with the spade in the garden of corruption planted by the Clintons, he turns to the hoe. And so the spade work and his expertise using a hoe. He's faring well.
Anybody want to vomit?
Spade work using a hoe? Is that actually what I heard?
You sure did. And he gets 29, and he gets 29, and he is permitted to be on the publicly owned airwaves.
You know, it's enough to make one pray for a piece of fat to
to come off one of his veins and block his heart. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of fat that could dislodge.
Peter, you know what I'm waiting for? I'm waiting for some intern of an audio engineer working on a show one day to just kind of snap and be over it. Go walking into that studio with the webcam running, grab that gold-plated RE20 microphone and shove it where the sun don't shine. That is just absolutely awful.
That's right, John. He has a gold-plated mic, doesn't he? It's for real.
Yeah. And I was telling Bob yesterday, he thinks that that was made for him. No. The original gold-plated RE20 was made for a guy by the name of John Laws down here in Australia. So I'm sorry, he cannot take even the credit for that.
Interesting.
So, you know, this is what we're faced with. And I don't care for the horse race aspect of the political climate in this country. I don't like it. I don't like it a damn bit. But you know what? We've got to be cognizant of some of it, because if we're not, I mean, that little dust up between the Clintons and the Obama camp was mild compared to the tiger traps that the right wing has waiting for us, regardless of whom the nominee is. I mean, if the nominee wound up being Dennis Kucinich, they have all contingencies, all bases covered, and they are ready with a full stable of commercials showing, you know, flying saucers landing on Dennis Kucinich's yard. If it's Edwards, they've got ads showing his face on a bottle of Breck shampoo. Okay. Because that's what Limbaugh calls him, the Breck girl. You know, there's always a sexual reference, always an assault on masculinity.
Yep, comes with the territory.
And of course, by calling him the Breck girl, you know, Peter, you tell me, is that sort of gay baiting too? I mean,
yeah, absolutely. Of course, Breck is kind of low end gay, but
I wasn't asking for a value judgment.
Well, honey, you're talking to a gay guy. What the hell do you want?
And we know that Rush is lowbrow as they get, so it's as far as he dig for, you know, a line.
And, of course,
speaking of lines, I wonder who chops up his oxy for him during the show.
Oh, nobody chops, dude. He chews it up for the refreshing burst of flavor.
I'm so interested about oxy. I'm old school drugs from the days I used to do it. Can you actually chop those things up and snort them? I had no idea.
Well, no. What it is OxyContin has a timed release coating around it. That's why it's a highly effective pain management tool. It's also very, very strong. And so if you have legitimate pain and you are prescribed OxyContin and you take it the way it's prescribed, you come on, you go off, you know Jones. My dad was on it.
A crack in Boone's Farm kind of guy.
I'm Mad Dog 2020 with a little Sprite, you know, the Plum Hollow flavor.
But seriously,
it's got a time release coating on it so that you're not all, you know, with pain meds, you know, whether you've been to the dentist or busted your knee or whatever, you take your Lortab on the front end, you get some relief, and 6 hours later you're going, oh! But instead, OxyContin time releases. And so if you chew it up or grind it up and take it, the time release aspect is gone and you just get this immediately great big humongous whopping blast of what is referred
tingly
to...
Tingly freshness.
Yeah, tingly freshness, precisely. but, you know, if it's Obama, they're obviously ready to call him a spade and to say... And you know, I take that as a reference to his wife, Michelle. Or a reference to Hillary Clinton one, referring to them as hoes. So we're gonna work the black dialect thing on him. You've already got which one was it? Tim Russert or Chris Matthews out there doing the grunt work, referring to Obama shucking and jiving.
Oh God.
And of course, if it's Mrs. Clinton, they've had an industry they've been building since 1991 to destroy her.
But if it's Karl Rove jiving in front of the press conference, there's no reference to shuck and jive.
Haul, haul, haul. That's just fun. I don't care who you are. That's funny.
Well,
This whole process is starting to sound like a cutting room floor scene from Airplane, as though that there was like an election going on at the same time.
Yeah, I know. Now
on the job.
That was my favorite line in that movie. It was so funny.
Timmy, have you ever been to the gymnasium? Do you like gladiator movies? Have you ever seen a man naked?
I ask a guest that. Please let me do it.
Oh, I want to ask a right winger that. But on the other
hand, you got to do the beating wife denial thing when you have a right winger on, Bob.
Oh well, yeah. My favorite is still. I mean, it was one of those gifts from the gods. I had that punchline of that joke stuck in my head. And this was several months ago, but this is one, you know, that if I make it to 90 years old, I'll be telling my grandchildren, did I ever tell you when I had the guy named Bob Peters on the show? Because that great old joke about, you know, cop runs into a barber shop, looks at the barber and says, Bob Peters here, and the barber says, no, just cut hair. And to actually have a right wing decency guy on and get to drop and his name be Bob Peters and get to drop that line on him, you know, that happens once in a lifetime, tops. You know, that's Groucho Marx interviewing the woman with 12 children and you've got 12 children? Well, yes, I love my husband. And he looks at her and goes, well, lady, I love my cigar, but I take it out of my mouth once in a while.
Bob, tell me about Limbaugh. He must. This man cannot possibly come up with this stuff himself. Does he have a team of writers?
Oh gosh, yes.
So the whole stuff like addictomy and take a dick off of me. The whole when he was making fun of transgender. No,
right.
All this stuff is from a comedy writer, so to speak. It's oh so carefully planned and oh so well financed.
A word does not come out of Rush Limbaugh's mouth that has not been pre-scripted.
Damn, that'd be nice just to do your script.
Just sit there and read for 3 hours. Listen to him when he tries to take a call. He cannot do what anybody on this network does. He cannot carry on a conversation. Neither can Hannity, neither can O'Reilly, neither can Savage or Bortz or that Melanie Morgan freak or any of them.
Yep.
Because they're lecturing.
There's a technical aspect that we should let listeners in on when it comes to this kind of stuff. Now, folks, this is a common radio thing. We don't do it here, but in most radio, as a way of kind of controlling things, but the right wing uses it to an extreme, is you set up a thing called a ducking loop. And what a ducking loop basically is it makes sure that when the host speaks, the caller is turned down automatically.
I've read about that.
I've got one of those on our phone processor. I don't engage it.
Right. And I mean, you can do it very, very simply with just a standard compressor unit. And, you know, Bob, when we worked on the studio, there's those connections on the back of your compressors that say sidechain input.
Yeah.
And what those are is you would feed, you know, if you're, say, you know, having a little bit of, you know, dynamic control on your phone lines, you end up having the phone lines being compressed not by the caller's audio, but being compressed by the host's audio. And so when someone like O'Reilly on his radio show or Limbaugh on his radio show, the moment the host starts to speak, the caller disappears without even them being disconnected. It makes it very easy for them to holler over.
Well, there's that, and there's also, you know, we have a profanity delay here back in the days when we thought we would go to terrestrial radio. Yeah.
We got pretty nasty after that.
Yeah, we did. But we've got a very expensive profanity delay that'll put 40 seconds between you and whatever comes out of a caller's mouth, or your own. And at the push of the dump button, that means that 40 seconds just disappears. That's 40 seconds, okay? That's a relatively large amount of time, and this thing wasn't cheap. On the other hand, Rush Limbaugh has a state-of-the-art thing that cranks up to something like 4 or 5 minutes
of
delay.
His entire show probably starts 4 or 5 minutes ahead of its airtime. So it's basically running in a buffer, and they're able to drop
it on the fly? To edit it on the fly?
Yeah, you can just go ahead and go, nope, we don't like that bit, chop, chop, and bring it together, and it can be virtually seamless.
And so, you don't know how many calls a day Rush Limbaugh gets from somebody saying, you know, I hate your stinking guts, and I hope you get hit by a truck, you horse's ass. It never comes out.
Do you think they even keep him from hearing it?
No. No, he hears it and they engage it, you know, at a, you know, a finger or whatever.
Yeah, and he'll do the, you know, the cut motion with his hand at his neck through the glass.
And then what they do, and then the other side of this, and this has to do with the commercial end of things, what they do with that delay buffer? Do you realize what 3 minutes of time on his program is worth? That's right. They sell it.
Yep.
As what? Bloopers?
No. As commercial time.
Oh. That's even more nefarious.
Yeah. Now, so just to sort of bring things back to a sort of, you know, topicality or some sort of linear sense-making, we've gone through all of these things that they're laying out there, these tiger traps, so to speak, that they're laying out there for all the Democratic nominees, okay? Meanwhile, we can't even get our side to start referring to Mike Huckabee as either Reverend Huckabee or radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, as mentioned. And John, I don't know if you heard this earlier, but I always think back to that one show, that one horn section we did where you went, guys, aren't you just doing this Huckabee thing a little bit over the top? And no.
I stand corrected. I once again overestimated the American people, and I really hate to say that.
Well, you know, the Michigan Republican primary was today. Apparently, Willard Romney came in first, and McCain came in second, and radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee came in third. But yesterday in Warren, Michigan, he sort of gave his final hallelujah speech, and I'd say this really is the moment. Peter, I know you've already heard this. I don't know if you heard this, John, but I think it bears replaying over and over and over again, frankly. This is radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee's pulling the rubber mask moment. This is where the curtain gets pulled aside and you see the wizard and the rubber mask gets pulled off and, ha-ha, it's the devil. This is when he paints a picture. This is the moment where he paints the picture of the America he envisions leading.
Let's talk about God and the Constitution,
Mika. Oh, good. I look
Governor cool. Mike Huckabee
Here
yesterday.
Here we go.
I have opponents in this race who do not want to change the Constitution. But I believe it's a lot easier to change the Constitution than it would be to change the Word of the living God. And that's what we need to do, is to amend the Constitution so it's in God's standards, rather than try to change God's standards so it lines up with some contemporary view of how we treat each other and how we treat the family.
Let's talk about...
Did you hear the cheering? It was kind of chopped a little early, but there was an absolute room full of mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, fundamentalist, radical Christians cheering. And did you notice it's some contemporary notion of how we treat each other? Now, Peter, every single human being I've heard come on your show talking about the human rights issue as it relates to gay people is doing nothing more and nothing less than manifesting what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, said when he said, treat others as you would have them treat you.
I've never had one of my guests be sarcastic in the sense of rewriting the spiritual script. That's correct.
And so that, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, the King James Version.
Yep, pretty much.
That is... Apparently, that is some, according to radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee, that is a contemporary view of how we should treat each other. Because that's all. That's
freak.
He's beyond that, John. He is a legitimate danger to constitutional government in the United States. And let me extend this just a little bit more, and I'm not trying to hog the conversation. But it must be borne in mind. And you know, I tried to warn right-wingers about this. I said, you know, if you're okay with all of these powers that we're letting George Bush get away with having, imagine them in the hands of Hillary Clinton. That should turn their bowels to water. But it didn't. Oh, we need to protect America. That's why we got to listen in on Aunt Mabel's fudge recipe.
You know, I'm dual-minded from time to time. I have to tell you, I was even thinking it today. I was thinking that wouldn't it be nice if Hillary won and not, for no other reason than that would be the maximum amount of gall, the maximum amount of horrification for these people. For no other reason.
Absolutely. The thing is, yeah, oh, revenge is a dish that is best served cold. You know, that's an old Klingon proverb. But the thing that's so scary, John, and why I said he's more than that, a Reverend Mike Huckabee, a Reverend President Mike Huckabee, will enter the White House with all of the abusive powers that George W. Bush has garnered unto himself and which the Congress of the United States has been too pathetic and spineless to challenge him on.
He will also know every bit of the fundamentalist doctrine by heart. He will instinctively know how to accomplish it, whereas Bush, being the buffoon he is, needs cues.
And Bush, being the buffoon that he is only using the fundamentalists to achieve other goals. It's a purely transactional moment. It's like,
there you go.
Like,
and now we're going
paying
to
a hooker.
Real one.
But you're going to get a real one with the power to spy on every American's email. A real radical fundamentalist with the power to listen in on every phone call. A real radical fundamentalist with the power to imprison people without due process of law or recourse to habeas corpus. It scares
the real power to have you put in Gitmo so you can be stoned in public.
Exactly. And I...
Yeah, And all this fundamentalist vibe has all this Old Testament stuff involved, which still confuses the hell out of me.
Which one of the candidates was for doubling the size of Gitmo? Was that Huckabee? One of them said this. I wish I could recall which
it
one.
Might,
I read it.
That sounds like him, but it also sounds like Romney. It sounds like Fred Thompson.
Well, there you go. It might have been Fred Thompson or Paul.
Can I put in what I think in the last 7 days has been the most see-through pandering moment of the week?
You can do anything you want to, John. It's a regular joint.
Rudy Giuliani.
You never know.
Rudy Giuliani on Sunday showing up at church and saying something to the effect of, "I feel God in the room."
Oh, he did that in New Hampshire. There were several quotes that he...
He did in Florida.
Oh, he did it in Florida, too? He did something in New Hampshire the other day.
I thought it was Florida that he did it in just a day or so ago. John.
If that isn't the sign of a desperate man who is going, hey, you know what, this noun-verb 9/11 thing might not be working as good as I thought. Let's go pander to the dumb end of the base.
But the thing is, if he tries to work Huckabee's side of the street, Huckabee, being a fundamentalist radical Christian, will hand him his ass. Yeah. Oh, is this yours, Rudy?
Hopefully they'll just beat the hell out of each other. Sorry, Peter.
Well, I'm just going to say so there's no misunderstanding. It's not that I personally don't believe that someone who's actually connected to Christ's teachings could make the remark that I feel, you know, Christ in the room or the presence. I don't think that is out of line. But to hear a lying son of a bitch like this say that is not only, it makes it an abomination in my mind.
Yeah, and that's why I brought it up, Peter, because this is a guy who, you know, through his, you know, whole career as mayor of New York City, you never saw going to church on Sundays on a regular basis. In his entire campaign, he hasn't gone there. He has a history of actually supporting a woman's right to choose. What he's saying these days, I have no idea, because it seems like he'll lick any kind of butt it takes to get some sort of support, considering the fact that he can't even pay his bloody staff. But that, you know, and Crooks and Liars had this great picture when they posted about it. You know, it's him with his arms up. I have no idea whether this was actually at the event, at the church or not. But, you know, I mean, come on. If, you know, the Republican supporters can't see through something that drugstore paper thin, they deserve whatever the hell they get.
But they don't want
to. But unfortunately, we end up having to live with it as well.
There was, you know, in the early 1930s, there were journalists in Germany who thought that Adolf Hitler was a fascinating study in politics. Oh, by the way, Peter, ELO has a question for you.
You ever seen a grown man naked? You ever seen a grown man naked? You ever seen a grown man naked? You ever seen...
Which time, honey?
Oh, and then there's this.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Oh, bless her heart. ELO, the evil one.
I was waiting for her to cut. Did she come up with the old, you know, I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue line?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you just had to ask, didn't you? I've got that here too. It only takes a second. Oh, where'd it go? There it is. Here we go.
It's like I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue. It's like I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
but there's more. There's more. Just wait.
It's like I picked the wrong week. Quit drinking. It's like I picked the wrong week. Quit drinking.
And, of course...
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.
Oh, that strikes too close to home. Fabulous.
Oh.
I can still picture the scene with... who is the actor? I can't remember, but he's upside down, all red-faced with the tube of glue. It's just fantastic.
Oh, and by the way, from a listener, email-wise... Mike Huckabee, the bass player in Mulla. A question. Y'all reckon he'll have any trouble swearing to uphold that outdated thing, that Constitution thing? He won't bother. You sit there, you put your hand on the Bible, you swear before Almighty God that you'll protect and defend the Constitution, and then you start tearing it to pieces.
Right, because the word Constitution doesn't appear in the Bible, so it's irrelevant. The whole thing melts down.
We need to amend the Constitution to get in line with God's law, God's standards.
The Constitution, if you're going to protect the Constitution.
Well, I have a theory, guys. You know, I have a theory of why he plays bass.
Okay.
Cool. He wasn't smart enough to handle six strings.
That's an old bass player joke, isn't it?
Could you adapt that drummer joke to the bass player? Remember the drummer joke he told us?
Oh, which one is that? You can tell when the drum riser is level because the drool comes out evenly on both sides of the drummer's mouth.
Now something about taking breaks too long because then you'd have to retrain them. I think it went. That you didn't want to give a drummer a too big of a break because when they came back, you'd have to retrain them. They'd have to be taught again. You did that one night. It was too funny.
Oh, there was that great list at, I think it was even a Harvard Bloody University list or something that had musical jokes, you know. What did the banjo player hear in court with the defendant plays rise?
Ba-dum-bum.
Try the deal.
Best drummer remark. Best drummer remark I ever heard was here's a guy who can divide a second into 32 separate beats and can't make a 3:30 call.
That's about right. That's about right.
Yeah.
I've told you actually I'll save it for tomorrow night. I have a long form bass player joke. Remind me tomorrow.
Okay, okay. That'll be our Thursday or our Wednesday treat.
Actually, it won't be tomorrow because I am unfortunately off on a production meeting tomorrow, but it'll have to be Thursday.
Okie doke, okie doke. Well, let's see. Is there anything else we can just sort of put the finishing touches on the? Oh well, you know, while we've been on the media, let's finish this off with a little bit of just pure tacky cattiness. We all know that New Hampshire was Katie Couric's first election in the big anchor chair, formerly warmed by the likes of Walter Cronkite. Well, it turns out there is footage from Tuesday, January the 8th, the evening of New Hampshire, where she's caught making fun of Meredith Vieira, who replaced her on the Today Show, and dropping her voice and saying, "Time for the weather," and "Al," you know, mocking the Today Show. Mm-hmm. And then she continues on, prattling along and not realizing that somebody's videoing her the whole time. You know, why would you think that, seeing as how you're sitting in front of a bank of video cameras?
Yeah, right. Why would you think a camera's on?
Couric complaining about equipment. Is that a bad monitor on top? Because I look so much better in the one below it. And then asking for clearer note cards. And saying, you know, I don't know much about Huckabee. And then talking about John McCain's wife's eyes. They're like light ice blue. And she had a purple suit on. And they were so intense. I couldn't stop staring at her. And then finally, just muttering, "Oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit."
How professional is that?
No,
bloody
make
class.
It past our front parlor for to be on this network.
And this is all. This can all be found over at Found Objects, and it's the file's called Katie Couric 2 at Harry Shearer's My Damn Channel. Oh, let's see. We got it. Let's see how long this takes to load.
Just one more reason to love Harry Shearer. Right?
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, this thing. Here we go. Here we go. Just.
Tuesday, January 8th was a big night for Katie Couric. It was her first time anchoring election night. So here she is in New Hampshire, anchoring a series of editions of the CBS Evening News as well as news bulletins as results start coming in. And you're behind the scenes.
I don't know why this thing keeps coming on.
That's their version of it here.
Really? Can we get, like, better mics or something, you guys? Honestly? Can you fix it? Loop it, please? It's got to be looped.
I know it's got to be looped.
I'll just do it.
You got it, okay.
Let's bring better mics next time, okay, guys? So we tell Kelly, I'm going to say, how damaging will it be to McCain if he doesn't win?
It goes on and on and on. But, you know, this is your professional media at work. Charming, isn't it?
It's all about them.
And you know, I know that there's competition between networks, but to go and bag the very, you know, kind of institutional program that made you.
I know.
Sorry.
Yeah. Tasteful.
It's just.